So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Gentlemen, welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. That's where my heart and soul is, I tell you. I apologize to our listeners for about the first minute and a half of this show. Apparently, we're having some problems with studio and connection. We have some major storms right here overhead where I'm at in Louisville and PRP, so I'm assuming that had something to do with it. I don't think anybody has infiltrated us tonight. So I think we're in good shape from here forward. Let's just see how she rolls. Mr. Martin, how are you, sir?
Well, they haven't infiltrated us yet.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting
it. Why don't you just go on and say, conspiracy. There, now we're correct.
Well, you know, there's so much real stuff out there. You know, throwing conspiracy on top of it all the time just kind of gets boring, to be honest with you. You know, I mean, it's the truth. I mean, there's always something going on, you know, and I do go down a conspiracy road because I don't think that what we talk about is a conspiracy at all. You know, I mean, I can visually see most of the time when I'm getting attacked, so it's kind of really funny. But, you know, it's always something, man. These storms out here in PRP are getting ready to rage pretty good from the looks of it. So if you guys are out in the Dixie Highway area, just be safe out there. Use your head when it's raining and thunder and lightning. Don't get all crazy trying to speed and get in a hurry, because all you do is call to wreck and make everybody else late. So that's my line, and I'm sticking to it. We have a lot going on, Ed, as always, you know, naturally. I don't know if you've seen the story yet on Jefferson County Attorney Mike O'Connell. I love this story because Mike O'Connell, I have been screaming for a long time, is about as bad as it gets. The guy shouldn't even be a county attorney. As far as I'm concerned, in many cases, you know, he should have his daggone job revoked or his license revoked, because I don't think Mike O'Connell runs his office the right way. But if, fascinatingly enough, you know, of all the things that I believe and most of the community believes he has done wrong, including the way he's handled my case for over 10 months, he finally got some kind of a sanction. He got an admonition for violating ethics rules. Yep, you heard me right. He violated ethics rules. But this isn't your typical Judy Green or Barbara Shankin ethics, where he steals money, which I'm sure he does, in my opinion. No, they violated it because he wrote a letter, a harsh letter, to some district judges last December because he felt like the defense lawyers in DUI and other cases were using what he called disingenuous maneuvering. So if you write a bad letter to a judge, Ed, I guess you can get sanctioned for that, but if you ignore the law and everything else, it's okay. How do you interpret that? That's funny to me.
Well, I think, you know, the reason he got sanctioned is it's clear cut. You don't use the weight of your office to sit on, you know, to sit on or lean on a judge. If defense attorneys are out maneuvering you, then you know what they're doing, figure it out.
Well, I agree. And what's really fascinating, you don't abuse your office to sit on anything because of personal feelings. The law is the law. You know, his office kept me in limbo for almost a year now. I'm still waiting for the record to be expunged. Thank God that's supposed to be in works, so that I can actually go out and pursue a job that continues to pay for all of this stuff. And, you know, but they've cost me almost a year, you know, in employment and wages and everything else because his office wanted to be personal because I call him out. And that's fine. Got no problem with that. That's okay. But it's really interesting that, you know, he can abuse it in every other case except for a letter. He wrote a letter to the judges telling them he just didn't like the way they were doing their job. So now he can be sanctioned for that. That's just funny to me. And what's really more interesting here, too, what really brings another piece of this equation together, I'm not sure if you've even heard this yet, but apparently the ACLU has decided that they're going to represent Mike O'Connell. They've decided that what Mike O'Connell did was a First Amendment protection. So he's decided to fight this sanction, and the ACLU is going to represent him to protect his freedom of speech. Is that right, wrong, other? I don't get this. I think the ACLU has finally gotten to the point where they really are insignificant. What do you think?
Well, you know, I agree that you have a freedom of speech, but if you're doing it, you know, let's just say the individual has the right to freedom of speech. You know, a lot of liberals are going to stand back and say, well, corporations don't have the right to freedom of speech and rail against Citizens United. But when you're acting not as an individual, but as a almost, I guess you could say, as far as local politics go, as the head of a corporation, you know, you don't like the way your corporation is being treated and you're going after a judge. I mean, you're not acting as Mike O'Connell, you know, here's my driver's license, here's my Social Security number. Individual, you're acting as a chief executive officer of a certain entity, and you're effectively complaining or lobbying for the entity, not for your personal satisfaction or exercising your personal rights. You're basically bitching and moaning about the way that your crew is getting, you know, is things they're having to deal with.
Well, it's interesting, too, to me. I mean, this, you know, Mike O'Connell, there's not a whole hell of a lot of people that like this guy because he doesn't do his job effectively, in my opinion. You know, and there's several criminal defense lawyers who believe that Mike O'Connell deserved this and probably much more. They're really surprised he's contesting it. The surprise to me was that he actually put it out there, that he put it out there that he was sanctioned, because he's trying to get the public on his side now. Anytime the bar does any sanctions or the Judicial Conduct Commission or anything else, it's always private. I've got a letter from the Katie King situation, for example, and they told me that if they did anything, but they're not saying they did or they didn't do anything, but if they did, rest assured they did it within the confines of the law, and rest assured that I could trust them to do the right thing. That's the way the JC, it's all garbage. So there's nothing out here, but he decided he wanted to take it out to the public arena, so he put himself in this position. It's really fascinating to me that the ACLU is getting involved. I mean, essentially, what this bottom line comes down to is that the Courier-Journal did a series of articles last December, okay, and you guys can go to Courier for all of this information.
Yep.
But they did a series of articles last December that was outlining how so many DUIs that were being tried before judges resulted in acquittals, and rightfully
yep.
so.
I remember that.
And rightfully so.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And these DUIs, you got to understand the people charging you with DUI are the police. They're the ones who arrest you for DUI. They're the ones who have to submit the evidence to County Attorney Michael Connell, and then Michael Connell has to present the evidence and everything else in court. In a lot of cases, an alarmingly lot of cases, I should say, these are brought into court without probable cause, or some part of the law has been broken. Now, I'm not defending drunk drivers. I think drunk drivers need to be shot. Take their legs out so they can't reach the daggone gas pedal, as far as I'm concerned. I'm not a drunk driving advocate. I don't like those guys. Nobody has the right to endanger somebody else. However, if you're making these arrests and you're presenting these cases and you don't have law on your side because you've done it for whatever reason illegally, like we seem to have a habit here with Louisville, Kentucky, with LMPD, then these judges have no choice but to acquit. If they want to apply the law equally and fairly, they have to acquit. And in the Courier Journal series that they had last December, they showed a lot of these cases, but they also gave the reasons that they acquitted. There's at least one criminal defense attorney, that I personally think a lot of. His name is Paul Gold, and he stands up to Michael Connell every time he gets the opportunity. And he's quoted as saying in the Courier Journal that evidently Mr. O'Connell continues to think that the rules don't apply to him. It's frightening to think that the person who has been elected to uphold the law continues to flout it. And I don't think I could put it any better way. So this is going to be an interesting story going forward. I don't even really want to give it that much talk or notoriety because I just don't like the guy. But we'll go ahead and go with this. But Michael Connell may have finally crossed the line due to his own arrogance. Who knows? Other news, we talk about the rest right here. We've got some other things going on around the country right now that are pretty alarming. In Las Vegas, we've got a court officer. Yep, a court officer. This guy is accused of sexually molesting a woman, and the employees and the court manager and everybody else tried to cover up the assault. Apparently,
oh,
a lady.
Yeah,
by...
saw a video of that. Unreal.
It's crazy. This lady, Monica Contreras, went to family court with her 2-year-old daughter, was there on a divorce hearing, is all it was. The court marshal, Ron Fox, as soon as the hearing was over, she was getting ready to leave, ordered her into a side room, into a waiting room, and said he was going to do a drug search. No reason for the drug search. He just decided to do it. And then on top of that, to my knowledge, he violated Las Vegas law and federal law by not having a witness present in the room or a female in the room. So he's ordered her to lift up her shirt, playing with her butt, playing with her breast, all these other things. What does Monica Contreras do? She goes back into the courtroom to tell the hearing master, which is what they call him in Las Vegas, that her request for a female marshal. She didn't say no to the search. She just requested a female be there and handle the search. Because she went into the court and complained about it, she was arrested. The cop told her that she was being arrested for lying against a police officer, when it was clearly the truth. So this is one example of what's going on. These guys just think they can do anything they want. And then we've got another case coming out of Texas. This one is near and dear to my heart right here because this is pretty close to what happened to me, but Slayton, Texas police came to a woman's house to arrest her son. Her son was 11 years old. They said that they had a complaint against him. And the complainant, or the woman said that she knew police were coming to arrest her 11-year-old son because there was a criminal complaint. When the police got there, she told them, "I will release my son, but show me the arrest orders, period. Show me the arrest orders and you can have my son."
Yeah.
Now that's,
that's
exactly, and that's the way it's supposed to be. Cop looks at her and says, "So this is how you want to play." And he arrested her.
Yeah.
Miraculously, what's really even funnier, I know you're laughing, but what's even funnier, Ed, is her 11-year-old son was never arrested.
He was never arrested. There wasn't a warrant
right.
for his arrest.
Right, exactly.
And I tell you what, it's just you may be near and dear to your heart, but that's extremely disheartening because basically what you've got is a citizen, whether it's a citizen of a given state or the United States. Damn it, they know their rights.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you're an uppity harassing the police officer because you might just happen to reach back to the good old Bill of Rights upon which everything is founded, and you may just ask for a piece of paper. It's like, where is it? Come on, you got the house address. Surely to God there's a piece of paper somewhere that has the kid's name on it, says arrest warrant, but yeah, you go around and ask for it, just as a matter of, as a formality, as a person simply exercising just a little bit of your Bill of Rights, your God-given rights, and the police put the cuffs on you and drag you off. To me, in that case, going national, that's just like getting a lottery. It's huge. Dumbasses. I mean, there's so many good cops out there, but then there are just some total pricks and dumbasses that are just, hey, great, you're having a bad night, they didn't put sprinkles on your donut or something, so you want to throw the cuffs on some mom who's exercising her constitutional rights and just asking to be informed before she hands an 11-year-old over to you? Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
You just cost that police department a buttload of money, fool.
Well, you would think so. But, that's the whole thing, though. When I say it's near and dear to my heart, it's because I can relate to this, because this woman was doing nothing more than asking a question to make sure everything was proper. It was no big deal. She wasn't a threat in any way. She wasn't trying to hide her son. She wasn't trying to, aid and abet anything. Show me the arrest warrant so I can make sure it's valid and it's yours, And there was no arrest warrant to see. That was the whole thing. The warrant didn't even exist.
This case, I read about it. This case bothers me because on top of that, again, it's an 11-year-old kid. Now I'm sure there are some pretty rotten 11-year-old kids out there, but we're talking about a sixth grader here, maybe a fifth grader. And before the mother hands you over, if my kids were rotten. Or not. If the cop says, we're taking them away, I would ask for paperwork too, because I'm going to want to know, I'm going to need a case number. I'm going to need some numbers, because otherwise you're just a parent looking for an 11-year-old kid in the system, and you don't know where they took them. You don't know what the charges are. You don't know anything. You could go down there and say, "I'm looking for such and such," and they say, "I'm sorry, if you don't have a case number, you don't have anything." It's like, really? That's all she's trying to do. Again, the cop in this case is an absolute moron.
Well, and he's not alone.
He's not alone. He's a prick.
Well, I agree with you, and it's the same thing we have here with LMPD and some of these officers. Most of LMPD officers are good people. I know quite a few officers with LMPD, current and retired, and they're very good people. But, I ran across two of those pricks here. As everybody knows, I was arrested in July because I asked a police officer his name when he tried to order me away from a scene that involved my car and my son. And I wasn't even approaching on the scene. I was standing 60 feet away from the altercation. But he saw me pull my cell phone out and start videotaping, so he wanted a reason to harass me. He ordered me to leave the lot. I agreed to leave the lot. Just give me your name in case he gets arrested, because I didn't know if I needed that information or not. Oh, you think this is a game? Bam, next thing I'm arrested for just asking for his name. And that's Officer Dustin Hinkey and Officer Brandon Wood. So if you guys have had any problems with them, let me know, because I have no problem outing bad cops like that. And she ran into the same kind of people. And that's what's disturbing, because when you put these stories together, Ed, this is Texas, this is Louisville, this is Las Vegas. I mean, all across this country, we're seeing more and more of these police acting like they've got some authority. They don't. And I've got news for these officers out there who think that they've got this diplomatic immunity. Guess what? You don't. As soon as you violate your conduct rules and your standard rules, you've lost your diplomatic immunity. So, you know, I'm going to help people start suing these guys and give them the benefit of what I do every day and let them have fun with it. But this is what we run into each and every day. So this is disturbing to me. Just one more thing that we've got to worry about and things like that out there. And since we're talking about an 11-year-old kid in school, I kind of put this story out there, because this is something else that's like, what in the world? It falls in the category of what the hell is going on. According to Breitbart, yep, you guys don't have to like the source, but it's there anyway. Dr. Verenice Gutierrez, he's a principal at Oregon's Portland Public Schools, is convinced that America's white culture is negatively influencing educators' worldview and the manner in which they teach their students. Now, why would I tell you this? We've got another racist principal out there. That statement should say enough. Last year, a teacher in his district presented a lesson that included a reference to, get this, Ed, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Gutierrez says, that's it. Well, that's it. But Gutierrez says that by using sandwiches as an illustration, this teacher was engaging in a very subtle form of, finish the word for me, Ed, racism. I'll do it for you. Because this teacher used a peanut butter and jelly sandwich to make a point as part of her lesson. She's a racist, according to this racist principal. And he used the statement that, well, what does that say about Somali or Hispanic students who might not eat sandwiches? Americans eat peanut butter and jelly. You know, maybe they eat torta or pita bread. Well, you know what, Gutierrez? Bite me. Seriously, I am so sick and tired of having to cater to the world's needs, and somebody is screaming racism, a non-white screaming racism, because they want some utopian outcome that's only going to benefit them.
What,
go ahead.
On top of that, it shows what a raging idiot this guy is.
Oh, yeah.
You invented peanut butter.
Go ahead.
I believe it was George Washington Carver, a black man.
It was.
He was a black man looking for a way to help improve, initially to help improve the diets of poor people by coming up with a low-cost way to introduce protein into their diet.
It was. What makes this really alarming?
Yeah,
what makes this really?
He's an idiot. I mean, somebody should have just said, yeah, all right.
Well, here's what makes this really interesting, though, Ed. This is where I'm going with this. Last year, the Portland schools, they don't have any money. This is a cash-starved school district, folks. Last year, they spent $526,901, over $500,000, for services that were provided by Singleton Pacific Educational Group. The Pacific Educational Group, it belongs to a guy by the name of Glenn Singleton. This is who Gutierrez works with and runs with. Singleton's sole mission is to let educators know how public schools promote white culture and white privilege. This guy at Pacific Education Group says that this is why the black-white achievement gap is so wide and exists throughout America's public education system. Yes, your public school dollars, folks, are paying this racist moron to go out there and tell us that the white people are the problem with the school system. Again, this is where I've got the problem at. I am just totally insulted by the fact that public funding is going to be used for an idiot like Singleton, and that some dumb principal out there is going to scream that peanut butter and jelly is racist, and somehow or another, this doesn't make mainstream because they don't want to deal with it. There are so many things that are disturbing on this. It's unbelievable. It really is. You know, Ed, I don't know where we go from here with that, because I seriously.
Well, you know, I wish minority, you know, I guess other ethnicities, I wish they would just give a guy a piece of his mind. I mean, there's no reason whatsoever. I mean, he's a racist. I mean, you know, oh, Spanish kids might not like peanut butter and jelly. You know what? They might like it. You know, I like it. You know, yeah, it's like, okay, what a stereotype this guy's running with. Only white kids eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Really? Are you serious? He's like, man, it's like universal food. It's, you know, what next? Well, Hershey bars were, you know, M&Ms or whatever. It's like, right. Oh, yeah, they encourage you to separate the colors or something. It's like, what, really? Yeah, come on. Well, M&Ms encouraged war because they were developed for the Marines in the Pacific Theater for a candy that wouldn't melt in your hands or in your pockets during the hot days in the Philippines or something. Like, you know, look, you can find trouble if you look for it. You can, you know, and you can also make a complete idiot out of yourself if you, you know, without trying too hard, obviously.
Well, I think ultimately they succeeded. I think they do make idiots out of ourselves, and I find it an insult that these guys actually believe this crap and that they're trying to cram this down our throats. I don't get it at all. We're going to take our bottom of the hour break. If you guys, you can call. The call-in numbers are 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334 in the Louisville area. For you guys who are in the listening queue, we thank you, but please hit that number 1 on your dialing pad so that we know you went on air. And with that said, we'll be right back. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Ed Springer Show right here on the WVM Radio Network. Don't forget 858-683-1326, 502-805-0334, your live numbers. for you guys in the queue, hit that number one. Try to repeat that as much as I can because I'm very bad about that. Some people say, well, I wanted to get on air, but I didn't know how. Well, now you know how. You know, Ed Martin, I tell you, I'm looking at the chat room right now, and our good friend Mayo, you know, we're talking about being racist because of peanut butter and jelly. So he makes a comment and says, so if I like barbecue ribs, fried catfish, or greens, does that make me a racist or a progressive? I think that's a pretty good question. I think that makes you a progressive racist, Mayo. I'm not sure, but I think that's a pretty good question.
I tell you what, I like barbecue. I like ribs. I like them spicy. I do not like Shetlands. I cannot stand Shetlands. I'm so sorry. But I'm meat and potatoes. If it's a meat and there's some starchy stuff in there with it, whether it's breading, it's like, yeah, I'll eat it. So.
Right.
That's a good question. We need to ascertain whether that makes you a racist or a progressive.
You know, maybe we'll have to do some research. God, I hope not. I just thought that was funny, you know. And I'm just constantly reminded of the Dr. Seuss thing, you know. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam. I am, you know. So whatever. But it's pretty interesting. We've got some stories going on all over the place, and I know we're running around robin tonight, not really sticking to one major topic like people are used to, but there's so much to cover. We can get in more detail on some of these tomorrow, but there's another article coming out of Philadelphia about a McDonald's. It's very interesting. A girl by the name of Natalie Gunshannon, she's 27 years old. She worked at McDonald's restaurant from April the 24th to May the 15th. She was only there about 3 weeks. Why was she only there about 3 weeks? Because when she received her first paycheck, it wasn't a paycheck. It was a Chase Bank debit card with instructions on how to use it and all the fees attached.
The reason this is so interesting
is because minimum wage is 7 1/4. Most people that work at McDonald's make somewhere around 7 1/4 or 7.50. It's always minimum wage. We're right at it. You know, what's really fascinating is this Chase Bank card. What this debit card does is it loads you down with a bunch of fees. You know, instead of being paid with a check or cash, which is actually the law in Philly, they have to pay you with a check or cash, this particular McDonald's said this is your only option, take it or leave it. You know, what people have to understand about these debit cards that these employers are trying to use, you got to realize if you use that debit card at an ATM machine, it's going to cost you $1.50 every time you use it. If you use it for an over-the-counter cash withdrawal, even at your own bank, it's going to cost $5. Chase pays $5. It costs you $1 for a balancing inquiry. If you pay a bill online with it, it costs you 75 cents. And if you lose your card, it costs you $15. The bottom line is every time that card comes out of your pocket to purchase or pay for anything, they're charging you all of these fees. And that's eating up what money you don't have to begin with. And this is starting to be a major situation around the country. This isn't just McDonald's in Philly. We've got a lot of employers right here in Louisville, Kentucky that do that, Ed. What is the deal here? Why are the employers doing this and screwing the people?
Honest to God, Ed, I don't know. Because, I read about this and I thought it doesn't – to me, it's almost got to be malicious. I'm sure there's a certain level of simplicity to it. You know, you can do your electronics. You don't have to like where we work. We give employees the option. You want a check or you want it electronically transferred. Almost all of them go electronically transferred because it saves them from having to go somewhere to cash a check, especially if they don't have an account. You know, and we suggest what bank they might want to use if they want to get their money quicker because there's no float if you go to the same bank company banks with. Plus, you got a little letter. I mean, we try to inform them, and we give them all the choices in the world, and we're not that big. We're not a big company, you know, and it's not that difficult. It's all our payments are electronically processed and everything, and it's not that big a deal. The thing that really messes with me about this is all these fees on this is you would think the employer, and this is like a family that owns a bunch of the McDonald's franchises,
right,
and they're, you know, who knows? There's probably 1,000 employees or more. You would think at some point Chase would say, you know what, you want to do business? We want to do this business with, you know, for you. We'll charge you, you know, and maybe bill it back to the company. But you think that they would cut a deal? You know, companies do this. It's like, look, hey, you want to give my employees? You want to do this with my employees? You know, there are no fees. You go to bat for your employees. You say, look, right. I'm talking a thousand employees. You should cut your fees, because it's just like with HMOs or insurance or anything for that matter. It's like volume. This is volume, and you would think with a volume deal like this, the Chase would cut them a deal instead of tightening the screws on them.
Well,
I
and I'm totally in agreement. And you know, that's the whole thing. And it's just not—it's not just Chase. You know, they're not the only bank that's doing this. What's disturbing is the amount of employers that are doing this. I mean, even right here, you ask guys.
The employers should be leaning on the banks that want to do the debit card business and say, look, you want the debit card business. You know, you don't get to screw my employees. You're going to have to make
these prices really, really cheap. Well, but is there a kickback to the employer? Does Chase or any of the other banks that do this, you know, kick back X amount of dollars to the employer, you know, or a percentage for using their service? I mean, the employers aren't going to do it for nothing. Why would they do that for free? You know what I mean? So there's a lot here that doesn't make sense, you know, but it is becoming a common trend right here in Louisville. Many places do this. I'm being told in the chat room, for example, and I knew this already, but I appreciate them bringing me up speed on it. But you remember Jeff Reeds? He ran for Congress against you in the 3rd District Republican, or in the 3rd District debate against John Yarmuth. Right, right. And he was running. You know, you guys were vying to run against John Yarmuth for the 3rd Congressional District, you know. But Jeff Reeds makes all of his money. He owns Pizza Huts in Louisville. That's where he gets his money. He does the same thing. His employees get these cards. Now, in his defense, and I will defend him to some degree, you know, he does offer direct deposit or these type of cards. So he does give you a choice. You know,
yeah.
But there's a lot of people out there who don't want to have a bank account or be direct deposit. They certainly don't want to lose 15 to 20% of what minimum wage income they get paying fees on a card. You know, they should be given a paycheck.
Yeah,
you can go to a local Kroger or somewhere else and cash it.
As long as there's a choice, it's totally okay. You know,
well, exactly.
I mean, there are some people out there who maybe you know, don't qualify for a credit card, don't want a credit card, maybe they got in trouble, don't like walking around with cash, maybe it burns a hole in their pocket. Maybe they want a debit card, and, you know, the convenience, it's all there for them. Maybe they want that, but you know what? You give them a choice. You know, you want paper money, you know. You want direct deposit or you want a debit card. It's just, but the McDonald's in Pennsylvania, there is no choice.
Well, and I agree. And we're getting that state right here in Louisville. We still have quite a few that use these debit cards. And, you know, that's the game. They want to slowly integrate this into the pay system, and then you're stuck paying for all these fees, taking your hard-earned money out of your pocket that you could be using for diapers, babies, groceries, whatever, you know. So I've got a real problem with that story, and we need to start paying attention to that, because this is going to get worse going forward. I want to get into some national stuff.
On the upside, we've got a lawsuit going on now that you just mentioned. Discovery should yield maybe some information as to why so many employers are doing this. You know, like I say, I'm sitting here, my mind's just going. It's like, is there some kind of kickback? Is there maybe the bank is processing their payroll for, you know, in order to be able to herd the employees, you know, onto those cards and get their cut? I don't know. It's beyond me why people don't give their employees a choice.
I agree, and I think Chase is a great example. Maybe Chase makes that a requirement if your business runs your deposits and stuff through their bank. I don't know, but it's something that needs to be looked at and taken care of. Some interesting information around the country. President Barack Obama, we just had a new poll come out today, actually, I believe. It was put out today by none other than the liberal CNN. CNN released a poll today on President Barack Obama's approval rating, and they actually admitted that his rating dropped 8 points just in the last month. For one of the few times, the survey found that 54% of the people disapprove of Barack Obama, which is basically reverse, because last month 54% or 53% approved. Now they've got 54% that disapprove. And quite frankly, most of the people that disapprove said it's because they don't feel that they can trust Barack Obama and he's not an honest man. Now
they're all Verizon customers.
Well, that's actually funny to bring up Verizon. That's actually really true, because as we know through the NSA, the National Security Agency, and everything else, and whistleblower Edward Snowden, who is hiding out in Hong Kong, we have been illegally spying using PRISM. And everything else for a long time now. We're illegally tracking Verizon. We're tracking your email, your text, your phone calls,
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, they're tracking Blog Talk Radio, too. They're tracking it all, man. You know that.
Oh, there ain't no doubt about that. We know they're checking us.
We're not the NSA.
Yeah, we should. And we know we're not as big as some people. I'm not foolish about how big we are, but it's amazing that they have to waste time checking us, which says a lot about the reach that we have. But it is interesting. And then we find out through Edward Snowden, China has been subjected to illegal data attacks and transfers and things like that through our NSA. Today, China basically said that they're sick of it. They're demanding that Washington explain their monitoring program to the international community. Several nations, including some of our allies, have been very angry because we found out about this, that Edward Snowden has actually created a firestorm, if you will. And this is what has the U.S. authorities so worried and stressed right now. That's why they're trying to brand this guy a traitor. They're trying to discount what he did, which wasn't a traitorous act, in my opinion, at all. The U.S. has been illegally tapping hard servers, everything else, internet companies, for personal data all over the world, not just in the mainstream U.S. We know they're doing it here, but now we find out they're doing it everywhere, and the Chinese are starting to get concerned with that. Now, why does this matter? Well, it's simple. How much of the debt does China own? You know, how much of this are they going to take before they say, okay, we'll play hardball? You know what I mean? So where is this going to take us now that China?
I'm not going to side with the U.S. or Snowden, but I just have to observe that of all the people that should be outraged, it's like, really? Really? The Chinese, with all the hacking that they've done into our military contractors and everything, really? You're outraged? No, you should be impressed. You know, you should go, You guys play this game pretty well, too, huh? Okay, we get it, we got you. Touche, but no, it's like, we're outraged. Like, yeah, sure you are. You're impressed with what you are.
Well, I'm in total agreement with you, to be honest. I'm in total agreement with that statement and the way you're looking at this, of China, of all people, being the ones to moan, groan, bitch, and complain. I really am. However, what's fascinating is the fact that China generally doesn't say one word about this. They don't get involved in this kind of stuff. They don't want anybody looking at them the way that we're talking about them right now. They generally stay out of this. So if it's so severe that China feels obligated to say something to the world leaders on the world stage about this, to me, that says a lot about how deep this NSA spy surveillance really goes.
It could also be political grandstanding because, like I say, you know, everybody knows the Chinese are happily hacking away right now, you know, trying to get stuff. And, you know, this way they can stand up and you know, they want everybody to pay attention to this as long as they can, because usually it's them that gets caught doing the hacking.
It really is. But the fact that they feel so compelled to say something on a world stage like that is very interesting, because I personally think that, you know, China doesn't want everybody looking at them, the negative image and stuff, because of their growth right now. They're buying up as much debt of ours as they can. They're doing everything they can do. You know, China really doesn't want a lot of negative. They don't want a lot of people looking at them. They never have, like, eyes upon them for anything. You can't hide stuff out in the open. And, you know, it's very fascinating because they decided to go down this road. And, you know, when you look further at everything that's going on, why wouldn't they go down this road? I mean, you know, the National Security Agency, basically in a classified briefing, has already acknowledged that they don't need court authorization to listen to domestic phone calls. That's why they go through Verizon. Representative Gerald Nadler, he's a New York Democrat, sat in on a secret briefing with members of Congress, and he was told by the NSA that the contents of a phone call could be accessed based on an analyst deciding that. If they want to listen to a phone call or they want to do anything with a phone call whatsoever, All they have to do is any analyst they've got on the other end listening to this can make the decision to do that without any legal authorization. Now, this clearly tells us that there's no such thing as a Fourth Amendment. This clearly tells us that our NSA and our own federal government under Barack Obama does not care about American rights. Even Gerald Nadler, again, a New York Democrat, was pretty startled by that. He's an attorney, and he's also a congressman, but he serves on the House Judiciary Committee, and he was shocked that they would say something that blatantly wrong. And I agree with you. Where does this take us when we continue to allow this?
Well, you know, I tell you what comes to mind, and I don't even remember which politician it was. I think it was like Newt Gingrich. But do you remember the elderly couple that walking around with driving around with a little bit of Radio Shack kind of eavesdropping equipment, snatched his cell phone call and listened in on it? Years and years ago. I mean, I remember. You know, I think to myself how zealously the politicians guard their secrets. You know, they want their closed-door meetings. They want their super PAC donors to remain anonymous. You know, they don't want to. If you have something like the McConnell Center, the donors to that, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod. They want them to remain anonymous. They don't want to release their full tax returns. They never let, you know, they want to know. They're gathering mountains of information on us, unbeknownst to us. Yet it's just, to me, it just amazes me how they, you know, who they meet with behind closed doors, donors, you know, contractors, relationships. We don't get any of that from them, but they got all this on us, and then they're going to stand up there and go, well, it wasn't all that secret. We're doing it for national security. Like, okay, well, give me the names, you know, tell your super PAC advocates you. Don't release the names of all their donors. Oh, no, of course not. They're constitutionally, they're protected according to the Supreme Court. We don't have to tell you who those people are. It's like, okay, I get it. Move along.
Hey, and you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, because Congress doesn't want anything to affect them. No elected leader wants to be held accountable to anything. Case in point, according to the IJReview.com, Connecticut 1st District U.S. Rep. John Larson. You know, and I'm going to switch it a little bit over to Obamacare. He went on record, you know, U.S. Rep. John Larson went on record to say that if they implement Obamacare, it's not fair to Congress. So they want to file a friend of the court brief to tell the Supreme Court and everything else that Obamacare is not fair to federal employees, including the U.S. Congress. Now, I'm not the smartest man in the world, never claimed to be, but Ed, how pathetic of a double standard is that?
Well, it's par for the course. I mean, you get the political class. I mean, nothing surprises me anymore. You've got like the Kentucky, all the way down to Kentucky State Legislature. Their pensions are fully funded. All the people who actually work out in the state, their pensions are teetering, you know, they're teetering on a pinhead whether they're going to be solvent or not. It doesn't surprise me at all. And like I said, they want secrecy, they want privacy, they want armed guards, you know, if they request them. They want people with guns making sure they're safe, but you know, a lot of them would rather we not have the same opportunities. Oh, the hypocrisy, I mean, that's American politics. That's the political class. You know, hypocrisy is their middle name.
And I totally agree. And that really is kind of sad, because when we look at this and we think about this, did I mention that John Larson is a Democrat congressman? You know, so, I mean, the Democrats who said, you know, we have to vote it in to see what's in it, according to Nancy Pelosi, and all those Democrats blindly follow that line. Okay, now the Democrats are standing up and saying, hey, wait a minute, this ain't right. This is going to affect us now. Yet none of them read the bill. None of them voted it down. As a matter of fact, not one Republican voted for it. And the House GOP has tried to repeal it 36 times. But the Democrats weren't interested until now it's going to affect them. And it's going to affect them in a lot of ways, because it's not just them on a personal level. It's also them on an electorate level. I mean, you know, Obamacare essentially is saying, hey, you know, if you're working 30 hours or more a week, on average, that's full-time work, okay, you're going to get health care. your employer is going to have to offer you coverage as long as they have 50 or more full-time workers. But when you look at the math and you put all this together, Ed, it's really interesting. If you're an employee making $21,000 a year, which is roughly somewhere, you know, a little bit above minimum wage, you know, 9.5% of your income is what you're going to have to pay for health care. Your premiums are going to be as high as $1,995 a year. And that insurance is still considered affordable. Now, I'm going to tell you guys, the source for this information isn't a conservative place like Fox News. This is coming from a liberal place like Huffington Post. You know, they've got a great story out there talking about this. But if you think about it, $21,000 a year, that's gross. Then you pay your taxes and all the other crap. Then you're going to have to pay almost $2,000 for your health care. You know, how in the world can you afford to rent a place to live, put food on the table, buy clothes, spend money in your community, create jobs? You see what I'm saying? And what's really fascinating is, you know, the employers, I've got to put this in there too, and I want to hear you on this because you are a small business, but premiums wouldn't be the only expense for employees. Because, you know, when you get into the basic plans, which is all you're going to be able to afford at $1,995 a year, you're also looking at deductibles that are probably going to be somewhere around $3,000 before your insurance even kicks in. How many people on $21,000 a year, gross, have $5,000 disposable income to get benefits, Ed? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's true. And the thing is the people who are going to take the minimum are probably going to be your low earners. They're going to be younger people who, given the option, they'll just say, I'll take my chances, you know, and they're going to win. They're going to win because young people, you know, aside from getting injured at work or something, they can get insurance for that, like Aflac or something. You know, that'll help them with those bills. But, yeah, the younger people, truthfully, the deductibles probably aren't going to be a big issue for them because they're, like I say, they're the ones, your 18 to 25-year-olds who are, you know, they're all convinced they're 10-foot tall and bulletproof. They could probably run 7 to 10 years without insurance and never need it. You know, they'll go to the little clinic, whip out a credit card, and every other year they'll, you know, pay $40 to get their poison ivy pills or something. You know, hello, been there, done that.
Right. Oh, I'm totally with you.
You know, yeah, but you start getting into, you know, and that's basic. Now you start getting into families and stuff. Yeah, you're going to start running deductibles. You're going to, you know, you're going to, it's near impossible. And, of course, just like with our young lady from McDonald's in Philadelphia or wherever it was, you know what? You're not going to be working over 30 hours. You know? And then you're probably on top of all your taxes. Hell, there's some employers, apparently there are employers out there who are going to siphon a little bit more off with fees to get your money that you already earned. So, well, I mean, they really didn't think this thing out. I mean, they really, really, they're trying to force a quasi-socialist type of plan onto a capitalist system, assuming that the capitalist system wasn't going to squirm a little bit. You know, it's like, well, everybody earned over 30 hours, and as we've said 1,000 times on this show, you know, hello, guess what? You're working 29 hours now. You're working
exactly.
Something like that. It's like, yeah, well, those are the parameters. Sorry about your luck. The government just screwed you.
And that's exactly it, you know. And they did this. They want to put this thing on a socialist agenda in place here in America. So they start with health care. You know, and they did this with all the liberals jumping on board and screaming what a great plan this was because Barack Obama said so. Your union spent millions of dollars forcing this thing down everybody's throats and helping them sell this to the American people. Now the unions don't want it. The congressman said, yeah, we've got to do this for the American people.
The unions that don't want it aren't the ones that got exempted. You know, they're cool with it. That's somebody else's problem. Yeah, the smaller unions that didn't get exempted, they're not liking it right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at the UFCW and a few other ones, and we've got some serious concerns. You know, so, I mean, this is pretty disturbing on a lot of levels. And finally, I want to point out two things before we wrap up for tonight and give you a chance to get your little stuff in. We continue to talk about gun control on this show. We mentioned it just about every week in some form or fashion. But I want to point out a couple of things. Last week, June 11th through the 13th, which would have been last Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, folks, that's not even a weekend. That's the middle of the week, work week, and everything else. New York City has one of the strongest gun control laws in America. In America. They have got one hell of an emphasis on banning all the guns. Unfortunately, it hasn't stopped the murder rate in the Big Apple. In a 48-hour period from June 11th to June the 13th last week, 25 people were killed with guns in New York. And it wasn't just, and it wasn't like it was some kind of a gang thing where they just did open shooting in one part of the city. No. The only place that didn't have a shooting over that same 48-hour period was Staten Island. Wonder why. But 8 people were shot in the Bronx, 4 in Queens, 1 in Manhattan, 12 in Brooklyn. It's startling when you look at this. These are the same people who continue trying to get more and more gun control laws. And the gun control laws they have clearly don't work for obvious reason, because the crooks don't want to have them. And then they want to take your big gulp, too, so you can get a smaller belly. At the same time, we have to go back to Chicago, which we have talked about repeatedly on this show. They're probably the most stringent gun control city in the nation. And they had 30 people shot over the Father's Day weekend on Friday and Saturday night. It included a shooting of a 16-year-old boy. So this is just one more indication that gun control does not work, people. It does not work. All you do is empower the criminal. You empower the criminal to have all the power. He can come to you and do anything he wants. He's got all the control. He's got the power. He's got the gun. Bang, bang, you're dead. What are you going to do about it? Gun control don't work. And these are two more classic examples of that. I had to put those out, Ed. I'm sorry. I wanted to get those in tonight. I want people to read those stories. Go to NBC Chicago and go to MrConservative.com. There you go. Two alternate news sources. Check them out, because it's very true. Ed, final thoughts, my friend.
Well, final thoughts, going to digress a little back to the hypocrisy. I mean, like I said, I've long thought it. I'm sitting here, and it came up in a conversation today at work. My accountant, she does the work for all the partners in the company. We all got our income tax statements, all our corporate statements. We get them over the email. She email files them to us. So I'm sitting here thinking to myself, you think I was a one time, I was a politician, a candidate, wannabe, and how often people struggle to, these politicians, they don't ever, like Romney, they don't want to release their full tax returns. And I'm starting to think to myself, release them, my ass. You probably got them. I know the IRS does, but, there's probably a couple of other organizations that listed them off my emails. So, I just think of the hypocrisy. I think, everything from, and along that, like I said, super PACs, donors, business connections, net worth, you name it, who their golfing partners are, and all the privacy that they afford themselves, but they don't afford to us. I mean, there's other things. There's other, like you were saying, health care. They afford. They don't want to be treated like us, and it's just people just got to quit. They've got to quit taking this hypocrisy. I mean, it's like the old joke when a cop pulls you over, you say, "Careful, Mister, I'm paying. I sign your paycheck. Ha ha. like that'll get you out of a ticket." But the fact of the matter is, we do sign Congress's paycheck, and we control whether they're hired or fired. Yet, for some reason, we're supposed to be in charge if we can get 51% of the people on one side of an issue or another, but we keep taking this crap from them. I mean, it's just this political elite, and we keep taking it, and they keep dishing it out because we keep taking it. It's not going to end until we decide it is, because Congress and all the political class have simply shown that they don't give a damn about you. I mean, they'll stand up at political, when it's election time, and say they're for the working man, or they're for the small business, or for the underprivileged, or something. Or they'll shake hands with the wealthy donors and take their money. But then when they go back to work, they don't give a damn about us, and we take it. And that's just so frustrating to me that we take that crap off of them, and we'll take it the next election cycle too. You just watch.
Well, unfortunately, I think I agree with you. And here's the deal. We know we've got a government that's out of control, that doesn't believe in freedom, liberty, or the Bill of Rights. We know this. We know the liberal government, the liberals in this government, have bankrupted this country. We just haven't signed on the bottom line. We know that this country is bankrupt, and Obamacare is going to make it worse. We know that the criminals now control the streets because no citizen has the right to protect themselves. Go to New York and Chicago, find out for yourself. We know that the IRS is illegally checking out all the information they can along with the NSA. You know, when you mention IRS and releasing tax records and stuff, here's the deal. And I'll touch on that for just a second in my closing. I don't care what Ed Martin makes. I don't care what Mitt Romney makes. If those tax returns are legal and there's not any illegalities to it, that's the only thing I should be concerned with. If they're legal, they're not stealing from me. You've earned your money. Mitt Romney's earned his money. That's not my problem. If I'm not earning what you guys are making, then I need to do something different. And believe me, I'm not earning what you guys are making. But I'm too hard-headed to give this up. To give this media up, I'm too hard-headed to do. We've made too much of a difference in too many people's lives. So I don't make that money. But you know what? That's my choice. I can live with that. If we are so damn hell-bent and concerned about everybody else's money and everybody else's way of life, then we've got more problems in America than anything. Because in America, we go get what we're worth. In America, we work hard to get ahead. That's what it is to be an American. It's not to sit back on your ass and let somebody give you a free ride. It's not to sit back on your ass and moan and groan and complain because somebody's got more than you've got. Change it. It's up to you. All the power lies with us in elections and everywhere else, but we don't follow through and exercise that power. We have become a bunch of lazy, self-righteous individuals who only care about one thing. Who's got it? Why don't I? Let's make it so. That's it. Think about how much money it costs us for more IRS agents in your equation, Ed, to oversee the 501c4s, the super PACs, and all the tenants of McCain Feingold and all the other crap that opened the doors up. What did it do? It created federal jobs. It created those jobs that a president and a lawmaker could go through and say, hey, put my friend in this job. It's not costing you anything. It's on a taxpayer. That's another way to bloat the government and screw us even further. Get out of people's households. Get out of their business. Let people live their lives. That's what freedom is. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, Ed, we'll be back at 7, of course, as usual. We'll see you then, my friend. For the rest of you guys, I appreciate your patience for that first minute and a half of this show. I look forward to hearing you tomorrow night at 7 o'clock right here, same time, same channel. In the meantime, have a great night. We'll talk to you later.
You do the same, Mr. Springsteen.
Yes, sir. Take care.